Well, Ed, this is the moment that I know you've been secretly waiting for, and something where your work as an organist from many top choir in the land is coming to the fore here. We're about to actually see the canine choir here.
Absolutely. We've got three music stands, a couple of doggies at each one, and some huge manuscript paper there.
Okay, tail wagger display team here.
And tails going both directions on the music as well. Treble clef, bass clef. It's all there.
They've been practicing for ages. They're trying to get on Britain's Got Talent. I think we've got some music. Have we got the music, Neil? Okay.
Does this frequently occur with your choristers, Ed, that they actually just lie down and play dead?
Yes, very, very often. Especially the Braintree Choral Society.
For a moment I thought I saw Finn Pollard there, but never mind.
I think you may have done.
More bone money, what would you think? Do you think they deserve more bone money? Okay, you've got that, guys. Classical music. Do we have classical? Yes, if you want a yes, yes, here's some classical music. And dancers. Have we got any dancers? Oh, we have got dancers as well. Okay, let's go then. It better be good as soon as you've demanded it.
I don't think Strauss has ever been performed like this quite before.
I think this is just beautiful, what we're about to see.
Choir.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is what we call ensemble, rarely to be found in an adult choir, achieved by the Pooches. Fabulous.
You're listening once again to Southside Broadcasting on location in association with Pharma New Nutritional Supplements and multivits.co.uk. We have Ian Mills, we have Katie Grimmison, Ed Wellman, and yours truly, Alex Lefchuk, at the 2013 Countryside Live event. And yes, I feel as though obviously fate brought us here. If we'd wasted time in the craft area, we'd have missed that truly wondrous experience.
That's right, there's more evidence of craft here, it has to be said.
This is the first of them, it's called Cross, see why? It's quite a hard one for the handlers and the dogs. They have to move really closely together, not duff each other up in the process. We waited for six dogs, haven't we? They have to not move at all, but to shuffle.
And a moment of which Jamie Anderson, Ralph Titterton, and indeed the late great Jerry Anderson would himself be proud. The dogs in formation here to Barry Gray's iconic theme to the Thunderbirds TV series.
That's right, they've just broken out of their circle into a line which is now rotating in itself. Hands on shoulders, dogs behaving exceptionally well, aren't they? And they are the tail waggers display team live before our eyes.
Ian, your thoughts on what we're seeing?
I'm enjoying this. They're actually parading the dogs and controlling them in a well orderly manner, and it looks really good.
Much like I feel you actually get the work placements at Siren to actually do in many ways, really. Bit of synchronised marching there.
Yes, you could do.
Katie.
I'm enjoying it. I think the dogs are cute as well. It's good entertainment.
Okay, well, we've just actually seen an absolutely superb display. Ed, you were very impressed with the use of Zarathustra, Zarathustra, and so on.
Beautifully choreographed and in time with the music, and everybody seemed to know what they were doing, including the adults, quite well.
I think it's amazing the way that these doggies actually manage to control the humans to such a fantastic extent. It's brilliant. We're speaking now to
Angela Lowry.
Angela, just share with us what kind of led to the formation of the Tailor Wagger Club display team.
Well, we do classes. We do pet dog training and behaviour classes. And we ended up with quite a few venues, and so we ended up with a lot of things to challenge the dogs with. And then it got to the point where we thought, well, you know, what else can we challenge them with? Would anybody fancy being in a display team? To spread the word about coercive-free training, that you don't have to hurt your dogs, yank them and things like that. So that's the idea. We go around, hopefully spreading the word that these dogs enjoy it, they want to work with us, they're happy, it's got to all be fun for the dogs, and look what we can do with them, quite frankly.
Katie.
How many hours of training go into the show?
We do quite a lot of practices at the start of the year, and then we spend the year going around the countryside. We've been as far away as Wales to do displays and things, and we'll do up to 4 days. Sometimes there are 4-day events, whatever. But then we'll do a little local charity show as well, you know. But once the season starts, there's not that much time to practice, so we do tend to wing it a bit, to be honest there. But we've been doing it a few years, about 6 years, so the dogs are quite well seasoned, and so are the handlers. So, you know, we sort of ride on past experiences. My blind dog, to be honest, I hardly have a trainer, so I must admit, we're running on empty a bit on her, but, you know.
Ian.
With the show being so successful, how long have you been going?
Well, we've been going 6 years, you know, with the team, about 12 years for training. But it's not the same dogs. It's like a football team.
A squad, haven't you?
We've got a squad of about 40 dogs, and then each weekend, usually up to about 25 manage to be available. So it is an organisational nightmare because different dogs are appearing in different weeks. But it's not totally different dogs. You know, it's maybe just one or two that have to be dovetailed in and things like that.
And they all have their characters. I mean, the one that we actually, who's currently sort of decided to sit on my foot, which is great, that's okay, it's all right, you can stay there, no worries. Well, who have we got here?
Right, he's actually a freeloader today. He plays no part in the display at all, but he's only 8 months old.
Oh, so he's still growing then?
He's still growing, yes. I think he went through the 46-kilo barrier last week. Hopefully he's here to attract people and to get people to come over to the stand and talk to us about training, so that's his role.
When he's gone through the 46-kilo barrier, what breed is he, or is he a crossbreed? What's the connection here?
He's a Leonberger, so he's a giant breed.
Okay, that's all right. Ed?
The display was really incredible, and loads and loads of detail in there. And for people watching, they may not want to take their dogs out to show like this, but there's lots that can be gained and learnt from just watching in view of perhaps the fun you can have with your pet, and actually, how intelligent they are as well.
I mean, did you see the tidy-up sequence? What's amazing is that when we first sort of started doing that exercise, that challenge, it's one of our challenges, there's only one dog could do it, the collie. And then over the last 2 years, virtually all the dogs in the display team now can pick up a toy and go off in the distance and place it in a bowl. And it's quite an advanced exercise, is that. I mean, can I just mention what we're doing next weekend while we're on that topic? Because we're running a tournament next weekend at Thirsk Auction Mart, and it's our finals. And that's like, it's a knockout. Do you remember It's a Knockout?
Yeah.
Well, it's like, it's a knockout, but it's for dogs. So next weekend, the Numpty team are going to be playing against the Oddball team.
That for any of our Birmingham listeners, Dumpty's actually not a very bright person, really, Numpty's.
We accept that. We told the teams they have to pick really silly names. So all the teams have got silly names. And they have silly music playing, the Benny Hill theme, the Monty Python's theme. It's all like that. So it's a bit like It's a Knockout, but it's a series of challenges like the Tidy Up there. So, and then at the end of the day, they actually win a really nice trophy, and there's an annual shield that goes with it as well. So it's worth working and training your dog for, but it's very much about having fun with your dog on the day. So that's all happening next Sunday, and it's indoors, so it won't get cancelled or anything. You know?
So, of course, we're heading into the indoor period. We've got Scruffs coming up in London Earls Court scenario. I think we've got maybe some of our Southside Terriers maybe there. We're not sure at that particular stage. Is that something which you're finding more and more call for in terms of the indoor events as well?
Well, it's the time of year. We just can't risk our climate, can we? So we had our first finals last year outdoors, and that taught us that that was just in October. It's just risking too much. The amount of work that goes into it, we just thought we'd bite the bullet and pay for an indoor venue. What we'd love eventually is for this tournament to become a national competition, because it's not like obedience. It's not, you don't have to train extensively. You just have to have fun. That's all you got to do. Be willing to have fun, and anybody with a pet dog can enjoy it. So that's something that anybody could take part in.
I'll tell you what, the enthusiasm that's coming through here is so palpable. What do you think, Ed? Do you think we should actually sort of do a location report, if not certainly next week, certainly in the very near future, and follow the fortunes of the Taylor Waggers display team?
I would always. I was wondering what they're actually doing now. They get some reward, do they, for having performed so excellently this afternoon?
Well, the actual dogs or the handlers?
Well,
the dogs get a rest because they have to perform again at 3 o'clock. Yeah. The handlers get the perk for the handlers at an event like this. We're on a rota, so some have to man the stall here to talk about training if necessary, but the rest get to go and have a look at the other stalls and things like that. So that's the plus, you know. We do actually get paid for it when we go to other events, but for this event, well, we donate to charity what we get for it as well.
And the web address for the Taylor Waggers Club, presumably you have a web presence.
I don't know if you still need www, but it's Tailwagger Club without an S in the middle, just tailwaggerclub.com. There's loads of information on there. Got a nice website.
Katie, any other questions?
No, it was a really good show. I loved it.
Thumbs up there. We look forward to, as I say, following you through, and if you're happy, as I say, we will follow you over the next year or so.
We would love it. We would absolutely love it. We did go to an event down south. Can I just ask my pal here, Helen, where was that event we went to down south where they asked
All About Dogs?
In Norfolk, right. And they've invited us to go there as well, so it might mean a bit of travelling, but we'd love you to follow us. We'd be absolutely delighted.
We'll do that telephonically, if nothing else, but we're still following you. You've got one, not just one, two radio stations on your side, plus a multimedia thing. It's great stuff.
Fantastic, thank you.
Okay, we're now speaking to the wonderful people from Fruitscape.
Hello, my name's Clifford Kane.
And yes, in terms of this, we've got some wonderful selections of apples here.
Yes, all these apples have either been grown here at the showground, we've got a collection of Yorkshire apples, or we've got apples that I've grown down in Doncaster.
Okay, Ian, questions for yourself.
How do you prepare for such a show like this?
It takes a long time, so I've clearly got to have apple trees in the ground a number of years ahead. So I've got over 120 varieties of apple, and I start collecting apples in from the orchard in September and pick them as they come ripe. So they'll have to come at the right time and get stored to make them last. Some of them have been and gone, they've had their season. Others are still going strong.
Ed?
Right, if we can focus in on Lincolnshire and the northeast of England as well, how do they fare in terms of apple production? Are they good areas for it?
They're not classical areas for commercial apple production, but saying that, you've got plenty of farm apples that were grown in there, and you've got people like Laxton Brothers who were out from in Lincolnshire, so you've got things like Allington Pippin that originate from there, and then you've got a guy that was over in Louth, who's Grime Olby, who did a number of Lincolnshire apples. So there are lots of locals, and then you've got things like Hornsey Herring and Herring's Pippin that you find around the area.
Okay, they
are Lincolnshire apples.
You're an encyclopedia when it comes to apples, right? So is it safe then to see an apple tree and to go and pick an apple and eat it? Can you eat any apples?
All apples are edible. We're the only country that makes the distinction of them being cookers or eaters. Basically, you've got an apple for a use. So if you think of a Bramley being tart, they are tart now. But if you keep it till after Christmas, they have mellowed and become much sweeter. They're still on the edgy side, but they are sweeter than what they are now.
See, that's what I like. I like the one with a real bite to it. I don't like the ones that are red and shiny and mushy on the inside.
I like them ones.
Oh, you like them?
Yeah, I like them ones.
What are those then?
I don't know what they are, but...
one man's meat is another man's poison. And that's it. We're all different. The apples are different, and you can find... There's 2,000 apples, over 2,000 apples in the National Apple Collection, and there must be some in there that make some people's palate.
I see you've got an apple tasting set up over there. Katie is our official taster of such things, etc. What would you recommend that she should be trying?
I'm particularly liking the Charleston Pippin and the Egremont Russet at the moment, and the Ribston Pippin are there. But
are you up for trying this then, Katie?
Yeah.
Should we follow along and sort of follow this through? We'll sort of see how it actually goes, because a moment sort of gap in the setup there. So, is there an etiquette to actually tasting an apple?
We've got them all sliced up ready, so we've no cause to worry about. So we've got Flower of the Town to start with, which is a red apple. It's irregular shaped, and
it's delicious.
Okay.
Really sweet.
Okay. Stands up from that. I don't know, Ed, do you want to try a piece from this in terms of apple scenario? The whole thing there. Which one are you going to go for?
Yorkshire Beauty in view of where we are today, of course.
Okay. So, good.
Stuff. I just...
Oh, I see we've got a substantial sort of example there. You, Yorkshire Beauty.
This is a large apple. And the bizarre thing is, it's not actually a Yorkshire apple. It's... comes from Gleaser Castle near Ulverston and was found in the tip, transferred over to Keswick, where a guy called Mr. Greenup raised it and it moved from there and came across the border, and this wonderful large yellowy red apple became known as Yorkshire Beauty. So its true name is actually Greenup's Pippin, but is widely known as Yorkshire Beauty.
If we can have a Tour de France in Yorkshire, we can certainly have a Yorkshire Beauty apple that's coming through for that. Ed, what did you make of that?
That was delicious. It reminded me of my childhood. I think we had an apple orchard in Lincolnshire, and you bit into it, and the taste was so much fresher than my pet hate is when you see slices of apples in a supermarket in a plastic bag. That just seems quite wrong to me.
I probably can't comment on that.
But they're all useful. And the interesting thing is of course you've got some of these apples, when they're cut and exposed, they do go brown, and that's just how they're reacting to the air. It's not a sign of badness in this instance. Others stay nice and bright, and again, that's the nature of the apple.
Ian, are you up for a tasting?
Yes, I will. I'll just check.
What do you recommend for it? Oh, he's gone straight for the jester.
For a modern apple.
Oh, this is the modern apple.
Yes.
Very nice.
This was bred East Molling in Kent, and you can see, when you look at the apple, it's got a lot of gold delicious in its look, and has a nice red flush to it, and has a nice bright sort of flavour to it.
And one of our regular correspondents is, of course, the editor of Waitrose Food, that's William Sitwell. He's currently sort of promoting his brand of cider. Are there any particular apples from this area which you think actually work well in terms of the postscript when they go into cider manufacturers? Is that something you sort of steer away from?
Cider apples aren't classically grown in this part of the world. No, it's become a modern feature. When you get cider apples, they are the traditional cider apples of old. There is a Lancashire apple called Golden Spire that is used for cider production, but classically, no. They are dessert or cooking apples that are used for making juice.
Absolutely sensational. Again, a font of all matters to do with the fruit of the tree known as the apple. A genuine pleasure, and hopefully we'll catch up with you again in the not-too-distant future.
Aye, many thanks.
Okay, well, we have returned to one of the key events and key sort of exhibits here at Countryside Live 2013. That's York's Chocolate Story, the story of how chocolate made history. And we're speaking not only to Jenny. Good to see you, Jenny.
Hello.
She didn't expect to say anything, but she has. And Stephen, of course. Stephen, you were working like a whirling dervish before with all these kind of things. How's it gone? Very busy, I presume.
Very busy, yes. Children waiting for lollies are a frightening prospect if you don't have an efficient system, so we've been doing our best.
Absolutely. Ed.
Okay, so Steve, quickly, I know you're a busy man, talk us through how that becomes that.
Basically we have tempered chocolate, which is chocolate that we've melted and then holding at the right temperature to keep it nice and fluid, and also when it sets it becomes nice and shiny and snappy. We pipe out a circular chocolate disc. The children give it a little shake, let it settle, put a stick into it, and then they decorate it with chocolate sweets and decorations to their taste. And then we pop them in the fridge for 10 minutes. Normally you don't put chocolate in the fridge, but 10 minutes just allows it to set. And then they come back and take them away and presumably eat them and enjoy them.
I'm very impressed by two things. Firstly, that you can actually purchase a piece of equipment called a chocolate holding tank. I've always wanted one of those. And secondly, the aroma around your stall here. It's incredible.
Yes, well, you should come to York's chocolate story itself. It's one must be one of the most fragrant places to work in the country. And chocolate also contains or evokes theobromine in people, which means that they anticipate pleasure. And that is something that I think we spend every day doing, enjoying the pleasure of chocolate.
So do you have real-life Oompa Loompas working in your chocolate factory then, or maybe not?
No, we don't. We did have a party of people who came dressed as Oompa Loompas for their tour, but we're very much telling the story of chocolate making in York and...
Don't do it with Roald Dahl, please.
Quite.
Right, okay, should we leave that there?
I think that's fantastic. Listen, I'm sure we will see you again, hopefully this side of Christmas. I'm already looking at the side which says reveal how the Terry's chocolate orange was pipped by the chocolate apple.
Absolutely.
So all sorts of stories there. And yes, I was going to say if there was any sort of material for Edge to actually taste, but I think you've even run out of all the ingredients as well.
Well, we're just having to make some more chocolate, so...
When we come to visit, I will taste to my heart's content.
There'll be plenty for you. Yeah, come and see us.
Stephen, genuinely a pleasure. We'll see you again very soon. Many thanks.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Okay, so we are at that time where we need to wrap up the sequence. Jill Appleton has headed off, and obviously Keith Tainton and Jill Prowse were around yesterday, and they've gone. Lou Bevin has been abducted or has gone in all sorts of ways, but the remaining team of top quality co-presenters for both Southside Broadcasting and Siren 107.3 FM include Ian Mills, Katie Grimson and Ed Wellman. Katie, what are your highlights been of the show so far?
It's going to have to be me herding a sheep.
Indeed, the way you actually handled those Jacobs, if not borderline wonderment, it was just truly, truly amazing. Ed, your own highlights?
I think all of it, Alex, but especially given that there are substantially fewer people here than there were at the Great Yorkshire Show, the chance to have a bit of more of an extended chat with some of the stall holders, for instance, the man who knew everything about
apples
and throughout the UK, what they were like, where they came from, and people's names, people who were growing them in different counties, quite remarkable.
No pears, but apples. Ian?
I've enjoyed the whole event. It's my first time, like I said, and I was quite amazed of how much information you got, the jargon that you need to speak or understand,
speaking the jargon in English, man.
how the farmers put their stalls out, in a sense, their shop windows, so that anybody else who's interested in that sort of thing can find out a bit more about it. And it's very open, very friendly.
From cattle through to sheep through to the joys of ducks and other wildfowl, plus of course some of the top craft scenarios. This has been Southside Broadcasting and the Midweek Drive from Siren FM on location at the 2013 Countryside Live. And on to the next report, I think, ladies and gentlemen. What do you say?
When next report will be down south, won't it, I think?